Greetings and salutations. It is the Clary Podcast. How are you guys doing? It is the first, I think, first real day that's going to be nice for a long time. There was one day back in March where it almost got up to 70. And it was like snow day in The Simpsons. Remember that episode where Bart Simpson prays to God so he doesn't have to do his homework? And a snowstorm comes in, and everybody's outside having the greatest time ever because it's a snow day. It was like that. It's only a one-time thing. And that was but everybody was out. Everybody was out having a grand old time. Everyone brought out their old classic cars in Minnesota. Motorcycle riders were going by. Hell, they even set out the chairs over on the bars and the restaurants, some of them over in the WBL. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. And I'm like, now's the time to break out the motorcycle. Get the crotch rocket out. And then the Lord Almighty decided to shit upon us for the next month with just cold, not unseasonably cold, but just cold and no sun. Just no sun. And oh, did I get in a fall mood. Was I depressed and sad. And yeah, drank like a freaking fish because there's nothing else to do. I would bang out all my work. I'd go hit the gym. And then it'd be like noon or one. And I'm like, oh, what's it to do now? Well, I don't have to do asshole consulting sober. Matter of fact, I'm even more of an asshole when I'm drunk. Actually, I'm a happy drunk. So thus, I was doing my clients a disservice by doing my thing drunk. If I'm sober, I'm a little bit more aware and agitated to the world around me. But if I'm hammered, I'm kind of like, hey, how's it going? All right, yeah. I am a happy drunk. You guys would love to hang out with me. I've been told, unless I'm really hammered, unless I'm completely gone, people can't tell if I'm drunk. They really have no... They say, oh, I didn't know. I'm like, oh, yeah, I was gone. Like, really? I'm like, yeah, I didn't know. I'm still eloquent. I'm still funny. But then if I get that one drink too much, then I don't get angry or riled or real pissed. Although there was a couple times, if the wrong people are around me, then I almost pick fights, maybe. I won't admit to that, but I might have told this little cocksucking piece of spoon, silver spoon in his mouth ass. I might have agitated him on. He was a scumbag. I was just hammered at a bar one time. And this, you guys got to understand this guy. He was, I don't want to give too many details because when I identify him, but he ran for office at like the age of 23. Dad paid for fucking everything. Majored in a worthless subject, and this guy would like try and get into nightclubs and not pay the cover. And you know, the cover's important. This is going a ways back. The cover's very important because it pays for the band when I swing dance and salsa dance. And so this guy's just scum, just a spoiled little rotten brat piece of scum. And I was just hammered one night, and I just went into him. And I found out, I think his dad cut him off. He had to collect welfare. I'm like, you still cutting ahead of lines and not paying your freaking, you still collecting welfare? Maybe you could go run for office some more, you little piece of shit. And he didn't like that. But amazingly, old captain got out of that without getting a black eye or worse. But aside from that, no, I'm a very happy drunk. And the only time you could tell that I've drank too much or have been drinking, period, I guess, is when all of a sudden I get really quiet. And that's when that's when my body says, oh, you bastard. You had that one extra drink that was too much, and now we got to shut you down. And then I get really slow. I don't talk. I get really tired. I can still walk. I'm still fine. But it's like, oh, yeah, Clary's going to bed. And then I go find a bed or a couch, and I go lie down, and I go to sleep. And then I wake up at like 3 or 4 a.m. like, what the hell happened? Oh, my head. That hurts. Anyway, so today is the first day. It's going to get up to 66, maybe 67. It's beautiful. I'm going to ride the motorcycle around, charge up the batteries. I guess I could just throw a trickle charger on. There's so much more to do. Put the first coat of wax on these cars. And it's going to be, it's not just today, it's going to be like in the 70s. And I know you people in the South, I know you schmoes over in Del Mar, I know you're laughing at me right now. He thinks 70 is hot. Look, the weather up here is like the women in Minnesota. You know, it's not comparable to California. A 70 degree day is like gorgeous, just like your average six, you know, woman on a scale of 1 to 10, your average woman who's 6 and maybe about 40 pounds overweight, she's hot, okay? It's just like, oh my God, you're beautiful. Are those potholes you're leaving behind you? Well, they're not that deep, so you are hot. You're my chosen one. My life partner. Your potholes aren't as deep as my previous girlfriends. That's how we measure Minnesota women, is how deep of a pothole do they leave in the sidewalk, in the concrete. So I got several days coming up, beautiful days. Convertible weather if you have it. Motorcycle weather if you don't want to go too far, too fast. And I am in a great freaking... Because now I get to try. I knew this day was coming up. So last night, I got to update you guys on my crucible, my furnace development. The first one was a failure. I didn't melt the copper. I didn't get it hot enough, but I fused the copper. The copper pieces were fusing together. So there was a little bit. I was almost close enough to get the melting temperature of my crucible up that high. So I've done some tweaking. I got some kind of like, not steel wool, it's a ceramic wool that's used in furnaces and stuff like that. It has a very, very, very high melting temperature. So I'm going to use that to insulate. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of the air pipe. The crucible I got has two holes in it. One for map gas, that you basically take a map gas blowtorch in there and you fire it up. And then you take just this one-inch pipe, and I drilled a hole into the side of the crucible, and I attach a hairdryer to it, and you blow air into it just to get the temperature up. And I think all I did was burn through the coal fast, way too fast, burn through the charcoal way too fast. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to plug up that hole with this ceramic wool. And I had to make a new lid because the old lid cracked. So I did that last night, put together a new lid. I'm going to put the steel. It doesn't have a perfect seal. So I'm gonna put some steel wool around the on top of, below the lid and on top of the crucible. And there's a vent on the top. And I think this will do it. I think if I can insulate it a little bit more, use purely map gas, not have cold air blown into the furnace, I think that will work. And hopefully we'll be able to melt the copper and I could start making my copper ingots again. And yes, that's what happens when you catch up. I caught up on everything. By God, I'm real. Hang on for a second. Let me go downstairs. I'm going to go grab the to-do list. Hang on. I know you mock and ridicule, but just there's nothing else to do. Look, when you have kids, when you got a family, when you got a career, when you're an adult, your to-do list is already laid out for you. Wake up every day and go to that place and go do this stuff that this other guy wants you to do. Or in case you stay at home with your kids, you got to wake up, you got to deal with those kids, ship them off to school, take care of the home. Maybe you got yourself a part-time job, whatever. A husband or wife doesn't matter. Your day is planned out. You got this. You got nothing else going on. You're the swinging bachelor of life. Or you're just retired. You think it's just me. No, I'm warning you right now. This is what happens to retired people. Right now, all the retired people are not in their heads. Yep. You got to figure out stuff to do. So I come up with my to-do list right here. This is the reason for my success. To-do list. Switch PayPal to LLC. Do Fargo's article. Check ear, nose, throat doctor. I'm going to go over ideas. These are kind of post ideas. I'm going to try and measure the middle class. Here are my post ideas. I want to actually measure how much has been given to corporate welfare. When people say corporate welfare, I want to put a number on it. Like, okay, what is corporate welfare? How much of it is there really? Because the left, you know, the government gives a contract to a business to make roads. That's corporate welfare. Government lowers tax. Corporate welfare. It's like, well, no. The corporation already earned those monies. They earned that profit. They're just lowering the taxes. It's not yours to begin with. So I want to actually measure how much, like, in handouts is given to, like, a Solyndra or something like that. How much you want to bet the corporate welfare goes to quote-unquote leftist corporations. Want to measure the middle class, see how much that's been increasing or decreasing. Because once again, we always assume the middle class is disappearing. Really, is it? Now, here we go. Perfect example of how caught up I am how much of a good boy I was. I'm going to get a metal detector. That's on my to-do list. I got to go buy a metal detector. Starting on the new book, the Better Business Bureau speech that I'll tell you about this because this is, and then we'll get on with the show. But I do want to tell you because it angers me. I wanted to do something. See, instead of just saying things and yelling on the internet, I actually wanted to do something. So you got to think. You say, okay, what's the most, not only efficient use of my time, but I'm not just going to go lobby. I'm not going to join a club. I'm not going to become an activist. I'm not going to put together a petition. I did the petition once to, what was it, to make mortgage payments, principal payments, tax deductible. Like instead of investing in a 401k or IRA, you could pay off your debts. I thought that, and that didn't even get enough signatures from my own people. There was another one I wanted to put together to eliminate prereqs from your bachelor's degree. I don't think that got traction anywhere. So if you want to affect any kind of change, you have to do it yourself, and you have to be incredibly efficient with your resources. You got to be a sniper. You got to think it really through. So I thought, okay, I came up with this idea. How do we eliminate colleges? How do we get rid of colleges? Okay, colleges are obsolete. The college degree is obsolete. There is no reason after 13 years of schooling, K through 12, that you should be able to go and work a job. And no, well, because, everyone has their associates. Now we all need bachelor's. Now that everyone has a bachelor's, we all need master's. Now they have master's, we all need CPE, continuing penis education. I don't know what the P stands for, just continuing ed. Because you're never educated enough. You're never, I guess you're never, ever qualified to do your job. Never. Just this perpetual, oh, you got to go, they'll never train you in. No, they'll outsource. You say, you got to go and pay and get your own education over there. Anyway, so what's driving it is predominantly the only reason we got to get unnecessary bachelor's and master's degrees and all this education is because of progressive credentialism, predominantly because of private sector employers. Bachelor's required, master's preferred. As I take a baseball bat to the HR lady's face that came up with that one. Oh, Aaron, are you in a bad mood? I'm not in a bad mood. I'm in a great mood. But that's what's driving. So I said, okay, we got to operate on the root. We have got to change the mentality of U.S. employers. We've got to change their thinking. We got to prove to them that it's in their best interests to eliminate the requirement for degrees and instead replace it with a new, I was going to call it National Certifications Board. Kind of like what IT has, you know, CompTIA, Cisco certification, all these certifications, like you're certified in all this stuff. And what I was going to do is say, all right, you're requiring all these kids to go through all this stuff that's unnecessary, 2 years of worthless prereqs, 2 years of stuff they're never going to use because it's academia, and then maybe another 2 years for a master's degree. Let's eliminate that and replace it with certifications. And this is going to be good for the employers because these students won't have student debts. They will be able to work at a cheaper wage. They'll be willing to settle for lower. It's not like, well, I need to at least make 40 grand a year because, no. Hey, I'm 19 years old. I did a year of self-study. I went to, quote, the National Certifications Board, and I got my certification in accounting, in business, in inventory. I mean, it wouldn't be as general as business, but these would be very specific things, you know, like accounts receivable, in inventory management, in, lab operations. Save those kids some money, tons of money, hundreds of thousands, well, over the course of 1 year, $1 trillion worth of tuition. And you'd be just as well trained, if not better. You pass the test, you get your certification, you say, yep. And we'd take people out of the U.S. employer world of American industries. And we say, okay, we want you to come up with the test. Come up with what the requirements are, da-da-da-da-da. And then this U.S. National Certifications Board would get funding somehow. This is, down the road. We'd issue tests. We charge for the test to cover our expenses. And then we'd start issuing these certifications. And then there would also have to be this psychological change on the part of the Better Business or American employers through the Better Business Bureau, through the Chamber of Commerce, that would say, okay, we're no longer going to take college degrees, or we will take college degrees, but we'll also take the certification. And if you could just get that groupthink change to happen, you know, over time and through the majority of U.S. employers, just one or two, if you get one or two major employers to take these certifications, those are the first two dominoes that would fall, and then the rest would come with. And you would totally undermine and obsolete the need for college, and you would strike such a huge defeating blow, a crippling blow to the left in this country by taking out academia, by wiping them out. They no longer can brainwash the children. Kids are coming out ahead financially. They don't have to waste 4 to 6 years of their lives in school. Employers are getting better and more trained, more accurately, precisely trained employees that are cheaper. They're working for less because they don't have their student loans to pay off. And economic growth ensues. So I spent the better part of a day calling the Better Business Bureau. And they said, well, we don't really handle that. That would be Chamber of Commerce. So I go to Chamber of Commerce. Well, what you want to do is call the National Chamber of Commerce. Call the National Chamber of Commerce. Explain this to the lady over in Washington, D.C. And she says, Well, I think we're already working on that. And I'm like, you lying fucking cunt. No, you're not working on it. Because we would have seen it in the, you know, we would have seen this in the want ads. There would have been a national certification board. Well, we're working with industries to go and find easier ways for. I'm like, oh, really? Because you're doing a really shitty job of it. You're taking your sweet-ass time, and people are still applying to colleges. That's just the empirical evidence that I'm seeing as an economist that you're not doing jack shit. So what I wanted to do, and the whole point, key to this, was to put together a devastatingly well-scripted and well-rehearsed speech. That with data and research, and you know, you guys could see my speeches every once in a while. You know, I did speech for the Tea Party. I did speech for Financial Survival Network. I've done speeches before. And I could put together a damn fine speech. And I was like, okay. And then I would, and that was the problem. Is like, okay, it would take time to set up this National Certifications Board. I don't want to. That sounds like real work. What's I'll admit? I'll admit I'm that asshole. I'm that whiny little bitch. I'm just the idea guy. I don't want to do any of the work. I'm just kind of the big idea guy. Suck my balls, you know? And I just did it. I'm like, oh, then I'd have to do it. I said, okay, you know what? This would give me something to do. This would also, like, totally put me on the map. It would be exactly moral, and it would be what I might be known for, like the guy who killed college. And it would be one of the biggest blows I could do to fight socialism. And so I'm like, okay, let's do it. So there's old Cappy, you know, idealistic Cappy calling up. And sure enough, I run in this fucking bureaucracy. Typical fucking businesses. Never call you back. The Wyoming three try. Well, we're already working on some little 25-year-old cunt sitting there in the Washington, D.C. Beltway. So what I was thinking about doing is with the aid of our good agent in the field in Philadelphia, Paul. He works, he does filming. I was thinking about doing the speech anyway. And then up front, we'd lie and just say, Aaron Clary gives speech to U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And then he just finds some video of people clapping, you know, in the background. And we make it look like it was a real speech. And then the speech itself would be so good that the Chamber of Commerce would have to respond to it and say, you know, people say, this is a brilliant idea. Why do you do that? Like, what? What's going on? What speech? What are you talking about? And they'd find out that I claimed to have given this speech. You know, we'd say, Aaron Clary, you know, title of the speech, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you know, August 14th, 2016. And it'd be, you know, I'd be in a suit and we'd make it look, I'd be at an actual podium on an actual stage. And we'd pipe in the applause and then they'd have to go and say, there was never this thing. But by that time, I hope the speech would be so good. And so, was it poignant is the word I'm looking for? It would expose and show just this clear path, not only expose colleges for what they are, and show how what a drastic waste of resources and time we are forcing our young kids to go through with college. But it would show a clear path or provide a very clear and superior alternative to the way we currently educate and train young people now to get into the labor force. That it would force the Chamber of Commerce to like actually so instead of here's what it is, it's better to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission. No, like Napster. You just say, hey, or like even better would be like Walmart. The guys, the Walton brothers went to Ben Franklin. Remember Ben Franklin, the department store? The dime store? Do you guys remember that? Probably not. You want to know why? Because they don't exist anymore. And the Waltons went up to him and said, hey, we got this new business idea. Would you mind financing? We'll give you a oh, no, they want nothing to do with that. Like, okay, fine. I guess we're going to do it this way. And then they just started Walmart. But it'd take time and effort. Plus, you wonder, is it really worth? Does America really deserve it? I know they don't. It would be the right thing to do. But I have to give up my time. I have to give up my time and my money, of which I don't have a ton of exactly. I got plenty of time. I just don't have a ton of money, and I'm a minimalist. I wonder if Paul would do it a little bit on the cheap. Paul, let me know. Let me know how expensive or cheap that would be. To like edit it. I know you I'm probably overestimating the cost of this. Paul's kind of like, oh yeah, do this, do that, flippity floppity, skippity scoopity, cutty cut, boom, there we are. And it's like, oh, okay. How much was it? $33.25. There you go. Here's an extra nickel. Good job, Paul. But that's the stuff on my to-do list. Look at, you know, that's how caught up I am. And now usually this is where I write another book, and I think that's what I'm going to do. Because it's going to be an essay, not another book, just an essay. And I said that about Curse of the High IQ. It ended up becoming a book. This is not going to be that big of a book. I can guarantee you that. Write that. Bang it out before summer comes along. And then it's travel time. Then it's go and ride motorcycle, climb mountains, and enjoy Cappy Cap World. And then right from afar, right from a shitty-ass motel in Nowheresville, South Dakota. Actually, let me take a look here. We got Undertow is going to be doing the audiobook for Curse of the High IQ. I uploaded Audible? Bachelor Pad Economic Files to Audible. And I don't know if they said 10 to 14 days, business days. I'm like, okay. Well, it's been almost 10 to 14 business days. So I want to say it's available. Nope. The only one available is worthless. Take a look at Bachelor Pad Economics. Nothing. Dang it. Wonder if they said that it's been rejected. I mean, sometimes they say, nah, it's been rejected. Your book sucks. Didn't meet our quality standards. Go to hell, asshole. All right, let's try that. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, Ed Lattimore got back to me. Look up this Ed Lattimore. Latimore. Lattimore.com. Very interesting fellow. We're going to be working together on some advertising. Okay, it's not there. All right. So it ain't up yet. Bachelor Pad Economics isn't up yet. Let's do some podcasts here, some sponsors. Get this out of the way. If you'd like to advertise on the podcast or my little online media empire, give me an email. Go to my blog, captaincapitalism.blogspot.com. Go to the profile or the about section or whatever. Get my email there. Send me an email. Charge $100 a month. I estimate we have about 3,000 listeners weekly, but it could be as low as 1,200. But it's hard to tell with the, you know, who listened on Stitcher, who listened on iTunes, did you download, did you stream? I don't know. It's somewhere between 1,000 and 3,000. Chad Elkins is a tax. Oh, you got 48 hours to get your taxes done. Chad probably won't take you as a client. But if you need any kind of consultation, any kind of financial advice or financial planning, contact Chad Elkins. Go to my blog again, captaincapitalism.blogspot.com. Click on Ed's little banner there. You'll see Chad Elkins, his little logo. It'll take you to his Facebook page, but that's the best way to get in contact with him now. He was going to do a website, but then tax season starts. If you know anything about tax season, I mean, you don't see the accountants for 3 months, or 4 months, actually, and that's about it. Then they come back and like, hey, what's going on, guys? Did I miss anything? You're like, only winter. You know, Where have you been? Then also go to my cafe press site. I put up a new bumper sticker. It's got Bill Clinton's face. It says, "I chose other women over Hillary. You should too." And so I added a little bumper sticker there. But we got Enjoy the Decline bumper stickers. We got the Clary Podcast mug. I should get my own Clary Podcast mug. Get a coffee mug. That'd be kind of cool. I should order that for the guys over at the Cigar Lounge. And then we have, I think we got Black Man's Got Out of Poverty coffee mugs. Because frankly, that image that Marcus took was just too freaking cool. It was too freaking cool. If I was a teacher in the public schools, I'd get that mug right there, set it down. Shut the fuck up, you kids. Yeah, we're gonna learn civics on how to hate white men. Yeah, in the meantime, if you want to get out of poverty, don't listen to a word I say and read this freaking book instead, all right? This book right here is going to be more important than all the civics classes you've ever taken. There's also the podcast archive. If you want to get the original podcast archive, because it's not available anymore on the internet for free because of hosting costs, let me know. I got them backed up here, and I can go ahead and put them on a thumb drive and mail them out to you. You'll get like the first 75 episodes, not the first 100, because like episodes 1 through 25 are missing. Don't ask me where they went. They're somewhere out there. Somebody's got them. But I'll go ahead and send it to you. You get a bunch more hours of listening to me doing my rambling thing and stuff. So just shoot me an email as well. Then we have the League of Extraordinary Podcasters. We have the 405 Media at 405media.com. Silvio Canto's Canto Talk, C-A-N-T-O, Talk, on Blog Talk Radio. Free Domain Radio, that's Stefan Molyneux's outfit. You can go to freedomainradio.com. The Beckloff, B-E-C-H-T-L-O-F-F, Geek Out with Chris and his motley band of weirdos on his YouTube channel. We have the Black Brigade at blackbrigade.org, DT and the Man. Financial Survival Network with Carrie Lutz. Crushed the Street, also on YouTube. And Engineered Truth, our good friend Matthew over at Engineered Truth. All those guys, go ahead and listen to their podcast. I got some other podcasts. Wait a minute, I should add up. Hang on. I try and help people out. Hey, you know, if I charge you, I'll sell you. It's like, you know, how about we just plug each other? Like Matt Forney, you know? He plugs me, I plug him, and there's no charging. We don't have to pay taxes on that. But no, we don't need to charge you. Where's my list of podcasts? I throw all the podcasts I listen to on my blog. Not even necessarily because I would recommend them for you, but because I like to have an archive of the podcasts that I listen to. You know, I got Bill Burr, there's Tom Likas. Why isn't Tom on the list? Tom Likas. Jeez. I'm glad I did consult my list again. Tom Likas, blowmeuptom.com. Who else I got? The Warfare History Podcast, Russian Rulers History Podcast. That's a good one. Redonkulous. A lot of these guys are all on YouTube. Redonkulous is Terrence Pop. Penn Sunday School. Return of Kings has a podcast. Did they actually do more than 3 freaking episodes? How much are we up to? 2 months ago, they did a podcast. Guys, you got to do it consistently. You have to do it consistently. Obsidian Radio and the History Extra podcast. That's how it is, guys. You want to, how do I make money as a blogger, podcaster, writer guy? Well, you got to do it every day. Of course, Return of Kings knows that. But so that's the League of Extraordinary Podcasters there. Then there's Glorious Hat. Go to glorioushat.com. Where Glorious Carl sells his Glorious Hat, his Carl Lushenka hat. You can go ahead and get that there. It'll be too warm for me to wear it today, but that doesn't mean if you're living up in Canada there, you can't wear it, because it's snowing in Brainerd. Brainerd's a northern town. It snowed there last night. We got thunderstorms down here, and it snowed up in Minnesota, northern Minnesota last night. So you guys can go ahead and get your Glorious Hats there. Then there's Asshole Consulting. If you think I'm smart, or if you think I really fucked up in life, you want to make sure you didn't step on landmines like I did. Like, if you're looking at me and I'm like this crippled, leg blown off kind of guy, you say, God, I wish to avoid that. Maybe I should talk to him and find out what horrible life mistakes he made. I might be worth a couple bucks. I charge $100 an hour, but I never actually bill out at $100 because rarely do people's problems require an hour worth of my time. Usually, if you're allowing me to be an asshole, that means I can be blunt and direct. And that means I could just tell you the honest truth. And that makes things so much easier, so much more efficient, so much more productive, and so much cheaper. So I think the most average charge... Well, I did charge, because one guy actually did have some legitimate business consulting, so we had to do multiple hours there. But I think the highest I've ever charged was like $75. I think I even charged... No, that was $100. This kid was this whiny cunt who was like this rich fucking kid. And oh, this and that. And I said, I'm charging you $100 for this little bit of advice. Stop being a whiny fucking cunt. And the reason I charge you $100 is so that it would sting and that you would remember this. And he did. And it worked. But aside from that, they're coming in on average about $32 for video, $22 for email. Do the Philippines by Matt Forney. MattForney.com. He's got a ton of books out. His most recent one, Do the Philippines, for those of you men who want to go out to the Philippines, and Do the Filipino Women. I don't think it's terribly difficult, but follow Matt Forney's advice so you're not stuck with one of those men who look like a woman and you don't get the AIDS. That might be important. AcademicComposition.com. Hey, we're coming up on the last month of school, and you're going to have your finals. And all those worthless academians, all those worthless professors are going to make you write a 10-page paper on some worthless Marxist tripe. And not only is that going to be painful, it's not going to help you out at all in your search for employment post-college. So why don't you go and outsource your writing and your homework to Alex's crackpot staff of writers. You can go to academiccomposition.com, contact him there. Also, if you'd like to become a writer, Alex is always looking to hire people, and he's also looking for marketers. Neither job is exciting. Don't get excited about it. They're not high-paying either, but you can live off of it if you're desperate for employment, and it's location-independent. Like, if you want to work from a beach, you want to work from a coffee store, you want to work from someplace, and your girlfriend's walking around in lingerie, you can do that. Through academiccomposition.com. Can you have your girlfriend walk around in lingerie while you're drinking whiskey at Goldman Sachs? I don't think so. Can you take a little break while you get yourself a blowjob while working over at Reuters? I don't think so. But at academiccomposition.com, you can. You want to know why? Because Alex is a cool fucking boss and he doesn't care. Who was I talking to? I was talking to somebody yesterday. Yeah, my buddy Brian. We had lunch over at Perkins. Or dinner, rather. And what was he talking about? Oh, yeah, he landed a friend of his a remote location job. And her job, what was it? She's a scheduler. And she can sleep on the job. She just has to be on call. So she has her alarm set, like she's got a, like, I forget what it is, planes, trucks, something. So she's got to wake up at a certain time and confirm stuff online, but then also she has to be on call. So she can sleep, but if the phone goes off, she's got to wake up, she's got to answer it, go on, do a little bit of internet thing, and then she could go back to sleep. I'm like, how, and she can do it from anywhere, as long as she's got within cell phone range, and she's got internet access, she can do it. And I started thinking, it's going to get to the point where the Overton's window will move so far away from the baby boomer. Well, if I can't see you, then how do I know you're working? That Overton's window will move enough to the right or the left, not politically. It's going to move enough in the direction, especially with Gen X, where we're going to be like, no, I'm not working. Why am I commuting? Why am I coming here? I mean, I know, look, once again, because I am ahead. I'm on the vanguard. I predicted the housing bubble, Asian currency crisis, and education bubble. I'm not bragging. Well, I am bragging, but because it's true. I mean, I got documents going back, goddamn well, near a decade ago, probably 12 years ago, say, hey, this education thing, you guys know the housing bubble and all that. But I'm predicting that the psychological change will come, especially with Gen X, who they didn't grow up with the internet, but we got it in college. And it's like, dude, plus we kind of built it. You know, we've done the infrastructure. Be like, you know what? No, I'm not working on it. And heck, you get tried to tell a millennial, yeah, you know what? You drive this hour one direction, fight traffic, get your blood pressure up to sit in this freaking cube with a computer that's probably crappier than the one you got back at home, instead of what you could have done back at home. And then, oh, by the way, drive back an hour later and we'll give you a 15-minute break. And they'll be like, no, I'm staying here. My girlfriend's giving me a blowjob. I'm going to be in my boxers. Today is blowjob, boxers, and lingerie loungy day today with whiskey. Fuck you. I'm not commuting. I'm not coming in. And I think the day is coming where, unless you absolutely have to be there, they're gonna look like, I got to come in here and do what? Write in an Excel spreadsheet or a Microsoft Word document? Nah, I'm gonna RDP in. I'm gonna VPN in. I'm not gonna, senor. Just no, not gonna do it. And so it was kind of like this. Now I think businesses are starting, of course, because we're kicking the boomers out, and technically
we drove uphill two ways, both ways, in snow and thunder, and if we had to do it, you have to do it.
I think as Gen X starts to kick out these dinosaurs, it's going to be more acceptable. Like, yeah, why would we? And that, it's just smart. I've gone over this a million times before, but the one thing I just don't get is why the heck there's downtowns anymore. Oh, I know, Aaron, you're on the vanguard. You're ahead of the time. You're ahead of the curve. But I just don't get why there's office buildings anymore, at least to the extent there is today. Like, why do you need these big, tall skyscrapers? I look at the IDS tower. I'm looking at, I'm like, what percentage of the people that are sitting in the percentages of the offices are completely obsolete? Like, couldn't they do that at home? Not just, you know, it would save us traffic and transportation expense from the government, and there wouldn't be rush hour commutes no more, but businesses would save billions, hundreds of billions, arguably trillions. What is a commercial rental market? Let's take a look at this. Let's see if we can look this up. Commercial rental market. See how big it is. Statistics, commercial leasing industry statistics. Size billions. This is great. They show you charts, but they don't have a y-axis. Oh, I see. If I want to get that information, I got to pay for it. Anything research. How cute. Download, $49. Yeah, no. Give me a second. determining Wall Street Journal. How big is the commercial real estate? Hang on, you know what? I'm just going to pause this and do the research and get back here. Okay, here we go, guys. Took a little bit, but I wanted to treat you right. All right, what I did is I found the total commercial real estate market, and it's roughly $1 trillion. But the problem with commercial real estate is that, I mean, a mall is commercial real estate. Rental property like housing is commercial real estate. Agricultural land can even be considered commercial real estate. What I'm trying to find out is these cocksucking motherfucking pieces of shit who want you to come into Initech, sit in a freaking cubicle when you don't have to. And then I want to find out, you know, so I have to go and find out the proportion of the total commercial real estate market in the United States, because we got the rental number. Now I need to figure out what percent of that is unnecessary. So I found a chart here. It's a bit dated. It's from 2004, but it's the total loans and leases for all U.S. commercial banks. So this kind of breaks down their loan portfolios. So we have family real estate. That's not considered it. Commercial real estate is 13.5%. Let me type this up here. Hang on. Let's do this right so I can do the math right. Okay, so 13.5, got to put that into the spreadsheet, so 0.135. Are we doing economics? Yes, we are. Construction. I'm going to put construction real estate. Yeah, let's throw that in there. This is not going to be perfect. I love how all these idiots, like, okay, I did a post one time calculating how much blacks received in terms of government handouts beyond what they would proportionately get due to the percentage of the population. And I came up with a very rough estimate of, I think, $8.4 trillion. I said, well, there's your freaking reparations right there. And then everyone blew up, regardless, everyone on the left blew up, nitpicking the methodology. And it's like, guys, of course it's not accurate, but it's a rough ballpark estimate. I did some really, you know, this is back of napkin calculations. You know, this calculation right here is only going to take about 6 minutes. Multifamily real estate, no. Farm production, no. Commercial and industrial. Let's take 50% of that, because industrial, you have to be there. So let's take 9.25. Oh, what else? So anyway, it's not like, gotcha. You're off by 0.1%. Like, these are just rough ballpark figures. I'm just trying to figure out how much we're wasting every year in rent on that. Commercial, credit cards. Oh, that's credit cards. Oh, damn it, this isn't it. Hang on. Shit. Wrong chart. Okay, found another chart. This is simple, okay? I admit this is not going to be accurate or right to the decimal point, but I got a chart here that breaks it down. Looks like, so you got farm, vacant land, business, multi-residential. I understand that this is not going to be perfect, but 39%. Okay, so 39%. So equals 0.39 times 1 trillion. Okay, 300. Come on, really? Equals 0.39 times 1 trillion. Okay, 390 billion a year. That's what companies are wasting ever so roughly on insisting that you show up in that cubicle and do a job that you could do from home in your pajamas while your girlfriend walks around in lingerie and you're drinking whiskey. Really, that's what we're wasting. What is that? Divided by 390 divided by 17,000. That's 2.3% GDP. That's a higher rate of growth than Obama averages here. Over, I mean, that's a more than a year of growth. There's 2.3% efficiency right there. Oh, no, Aaron, how are you a great economist? Oh, I don't know. I just increased our GDP by a full quarter of, well, not even a quarter. That's an annual amount of economic growth, just with this simple idea, with common sense. This is the sad thing about being a great economist. It doesn't take genius. It doesn't take brilliance. You want to know what it takes to become a great economist? Common sense and the balls to tell the truth. That's it. Just to not be political, to not be swayed by politics. To not become a Yellen or a Krugman or a Reich or an academician, where you just tell people what they want to hear so they keep giving you money. The way you got to – look, Shiller – okay, Shiller and Schiff are obviously brilliant economists. And obviously I'm a brilliant economist too, but it's not that hard. It just isn't – there's – the biggest bubbles, the biggest economic discoveries that I've ever made, I never touched calculus. Never touched advanced econometrics. Never used a computer formula. It was just dicking around on the internet a little bit and, you know, plunking some numbers into Excel using division and multiplication and percentages and maybe some exponential growth and saying, hey, something don't add up here. And that's it. That's why you should never go to school to become an economist. You never study economics in school. Oh, you study it online, you take Khan's Academy, you read books, you take in tutorials, you listen to podcasts. But then if you really want to become a great economist, you self-study and then you just write articles. That's what you do. You write articles. You write books. And people say, are you an economist? You say, yeah. Well, I don't see a degree. You don't need a degree to be an economist. You don't need a degree to be a philosopher with numbers. That's all an economist is. It's a philosopher with a dollar sign attached to it. That's it. That's all you are. That's all I am. But, yeah, it you know, once again, it's not, for once, this isn't government policy. This is just stupid average sheeple. This is a bunch of MBA fucks. This is a bunch of Harvard educated, from Harvard. These morons with their MBAs and their gray hair or their lack of hair. We've done it this way since 1982. We're going to continue. And it's why Silicon Valley and the new companies go and destroy and eat the old. Because they're slow. Because they don't... This is not a brilliant idea. This is not particularly genius. It's not like I went to MIT and worked on this as my thesis of, hey, maybe we should just get rid of commercial real estate and cubicles. the elimination of cubicles in the commute and telecommuting. Not terribly an advanced idea. Not like when they were making the car and saying, hey, you know what? These things last a little bit longer than horses. Maybe we should get rid of the horse and replace it with the car. Wasn't like a genius came up with that. Kind of common sense. Came up with flight. Hey, you know, instead of flying over these big bodies of water called oceans, or instead of floating over them at very slow speeds, we should fly over them. Wasn't like you had to be a genius to come up with that. But apparently, we're so stupid now in America that we've had the technology for over a decade to allow millions of people. To the point there should not be public transportation. There should not be commuting. We should be cutting our transportation budgets by 30%, or repair and maintenance at least. We just shouldn't be having this discussion right now. There shouldn't be a commute. Those office buildings should have been turned into condos. Who would want to live in that, like the IDS tower? What if you turned, you'd have to do a lot of plumbing, wouldn't you? Yeah, you couldn't turn all those, how would you turn a skyscraper that's made for commercial use? I mean, it'd be a great way to solve a housing problem, except you just have a big-ass Cabrini Green by that time, I'm estimating. Because you'd have to, what would you do? People would want to live, maybe they'd want to live downtown. I don't know. You'd really depress the rental market. I mean, that happened with the Twin Towers. Kerry Lutz, he did a great article Kerry Lutz did over at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. He said that we shouldn't have rebuilt the Twin Towers or built the Freedom Tower because the Twin Towers, they added so much capacity to the rental market that it depressed rental rates. And so there are several floors that were empty. They ended up sending a bunch of government agencies in there to be housed in there on the cheap. Oh, that would, now that I think about it, yeah, that would totally wreak havoc on the residential market, rental prices for residential. That would totally destroy it. It would cut it in half. But then again, I'm wondering who would want to even live in a former skyscraper turned into condos. Because think about that, one bathroom services the entire floor, maybe two at most. Well, if you're going to have your own condo, you're going to want to have your own toiletries. So you'd have to completely redo the plumbing. Electricity, I guess, is already there. Yeah, and then it's like, oh, do I want to live in this big, massive, you know, towering inferno? And you know what would happen in these major inner cities where the skyscrapers are. They want to do multi-class rentals. Or multi-income level rental. If you don't know what that is, look up Ghettos in the Sky. It's called Riverside Plaza. And they've been doing this with a couple other places, but they said, well, to be all touchy-lovey-dovey and screw the free market and people's will, we're going to go for a leftist utopia, and we're going to have, it's going to be multi-income levels. Yes, the higher-up ones will cost a lot, and rich people will buy those. And the mid-height ones, with pretty decent views, those will go to middle-income people. And then we'll have Section 8 housing being on the bottom. And then what ended up happening is the whole development went poor or Section 8. Because in order to get to my fancy condo upstairs that I paid an arm and a leg for, I have to go through the filth and the scum that now occupy the Section 8 building. Because we're all sharing the same elevators. So why would I drop $1.2 million on a condo where basically the basement dwellers are in the basement dwelling? Why would I want to do that where I get the chance of getting robbed and mugged? So like nobody bought, no rich people bought the rich condos. And if you go to Riverside Plaza, it's all right now. It's not that bad because I live there. Not because I live there, but I live there so I could testify. It ain't that bad. You got a lot of students that are living there. But back when they came up with this fucking kumbaya idea back in the 60s, not one rich person touched it. Says, screw you. We're not going to touch that shit. And that's what these touchy-feely leftists, all leftists, all Democrat, we got to help out the poor, even though they won't help themselves because they're lazy fucks. They would do that and have us, they say, well, the IDS tower, the bottom third will be for Section 8. And then, nope, no one's going to touch it. And then it'll turn into Cabrini Green. And then they'd have to tear that down. I'd be curious, how do you tear down, aside from asking 19 Saudi pilots to do it, how do you tear down a super tall skyscraper? Hang on, you know what? I can look that up. Okay, I found it, and this is sad. If you guys want to, Atham, stop what you're doing. Look up the Singer Building in 1968. This is tragic. The Singer Building, you just look at it, it's a work of art. It's just a beautiful work of art. And they tore it down in 1968. I don't know why. Probably because of economics. And that's one of the things I do rue about economics is efficiency will replace beauty. And they probably put 1968. Yeah, they put up some minimalist piece of shit. Look up the Singer Building, guys. This is so sad. Oh, look at this thing. Look at the beauty. Anyway, I'll continue on. today we look at techniques, both new and old, for skyscraper demolition. The tallest demolition project to date took place in New York City with the Singer Building, built in 1908. At 47 stories, the tower was demolished in 1968 because its top tower was rendered economically unviable. Modern businesses were demanding more office space, but the tower portion of the building contained only 4,200 square feet per floor, compared with the 37,000 square feet per floor of the U.S. Steel Building, now Liberty One Plaza, that replaced it. All right, just bear with me, guys. I got to see what Liberty One Plaza looks like. Oh, Jesus Christ, really? This piece of shit. This piece of shit replaced. Look up Liberty One Plaza. Look up this horrendous piece of shit. And then look up Singer Plaza. No, not the Singer named Plaza. Jesus. The Singer Building. Sorry, hang on. Oh, I'm going to write a post about this. The Singer Building. Oh, guys, this is horrible. Oh, look at it. Look at it. We tore that down to put up a black rectangle. Oh. Why? Why? Fuck. It's like when you watch those old black and white movies and everyone's dressed up in downtown New York and the buildings are all nice and everything, and that doesn't exist anymore. That just doesn't exist. That's where, in my mind, I thought we'd just build more of that crap. That's where the United States would be going. Everybody would be dressed in suits and dresses. The buildings would be even more ornate than that. But no, we just... Oh, okay, I'll get back to the topic. I'm sorry, guys. This is just a tragedy. Here are a number of techniques to demolish skyscrapers. One, engineers demolish a building by knocking out the bottom floor and lowering it on computer-controlled hydraulic jacks. Japanese construction firm Kajimiya Corporation adopted this elaborate technique when taking down the two office towers in Tokyo. Dismantling tall buildings from the top down. This is often carried out by a moving scaffold, which causes the tower to shrink slowly. Another Japanese corporation, Taisei Corporation, developed this technique. It is using it to tear down the Akasaka Prince Hotel. Work began in early 2011, with two floors being taken down every 10 days. Okay, so you break it. Are you taking it down from the top? Implosion. 6 months prepared. One of the most famous implosions was the demolition of the Pruitt-Igoe housing project in St. Louis, Missouri. Oh, because J.L. Hudson store in Detroit, Michigan. All right, let's see. They got a little video here of it. Let's take a look. 1998. Oh, okay, they're going to talk about it. Okay, so this is a sizable one. You can hear the explosions going. There it goes. Wow. Imagine if you were one of the guys that, you know, were up on those girders and you saw your life's work destroyed like that. All right, well, this building had like a fair amount of room around it that they could do it. And it wasn't that tall. See, that is that. But I'm talking like, okay, so basically, if you're going to take down, say, the IDS tower, you're not going to be able to exploit it. There's too many buildings nearby. All you got is a street separating you in between all the different things. You have to take it down one building at a time. They could take down a floor every 10 days. Let's do the math.
as Microsoft Excel loads. Thank you, Microsoft Excel. All right. Let's say you got a 50-story building, one floor every 10 days, 500 days. Did I do that right? Yeah. 500 days. So a year and a half, you could take it down. You know what that makes? That's not too bad. That's not too bad. That's what's going to happen. I swear, because like I said before, what is going to happen is as the baby boomers die off and Gen X takes over, says, well, what the fuck? Why are we spending, what did the number I come up with, $390 billion a year on unnecessary rental expense? We're going to get rid of that lickety-quick. They will go. I think it's going to happen in our time, guys. I think you're going to see these skyscrapers go away, and we're going to have to destroy these super tall skyscrapers. That or convert them into rental property or housing, which I don't think anyone's going to live in because of the aforementioned problems of, oh, we got to house the fucking degenerates of society in with the elites, and no elite's going to buy it. So they're going to be torn down. What's going to replace the downtown? Parks. Here's some parks with the meth heads and the heroin addicts and the whores. Would you like to come downtown Minneapolis? It's cold. We put an ice rink here and a greenway and some bike paths. I'll admit, this is not as sure as a bet as I was with the housing bubble. I admit that. I mean, that one was pretty much like, hey, this ain't going to last forever. But I wonder, with that internet, if these commercial buildings, if the skyscraper does have a limited life expectancy, and unless you put a lot of bathrooms in there and you sell only to the highest and richest of bidders, you're not going to see the skyscraper. All right, we're still on sponsors here. Where do we go? Academic composition, Philippines. My classes, the analysis, evaluation of stocks, and stocks, bonds, investing. Well, Mike, go ahead and take those classes there if you want. But yeah, guys, look up the Singer Building and then Liberty One Plaza. It's basically what we did to our women. It was beautiful at one time, and now it's ugly and big and disgusting. That's... It's 57 minutes. Jesus Christ. Obviously, this is the Curse Full podcast. You know what? Let me get a couple more sponsors in here. Then I'll go into, what we got? We got news. We got crap. Pushing Rubber Downhill by Adam Piggott. You could go to his website, his blog, Pushing Rubber Downhill. And you can also get his book, Pushing Rubber Downhill, in a paperback, Kindle, and now Audible. It's also officially available in Audible. So go ahead. Great story about what every man should aim to become. Boy, him and Ed Lattimore would definitely... I got to get the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, like the real ones. We got to get these guys together. Young men, Denver Ben, all these guys who are elites. The great Matt Baldoni. Man, they should... Now my brain is starting to spin. What if these guys were to... we get Glendon in here. Get these guys to start writing about hustle, achievement, how to be successful, what they'd recommend. That might be a good series to put together. Then we also have Welcome to the Divide by S.P. Daily. Please, ladies and gentlemen, if you want your brain to be stimulated, get this book. It takes a first, it's a little rough going at first, not because of bad writing, but because you don't know what's going on. But this book should be made into a movie. It is really that good. Welcome to the Divide. It's available on Amazon in paperback and Kindle. Help out our friend. It is a tragedy. What's his sales rank up to now? Please tell me it's higher than The Black Man's Guide Out of Poverty. Welcome to the Divide by S.P. Daily. Kindle's 15. $16 paperbacks, $14 Kindle. What's the rank? What do you mean not enabled? Oh, is this on the Kindle? Oh, that's on the Kindle. Let's do paperback. Oh, don't tell me the sales are so slow there's no ranking. Ah, Jesus. The sales are slow, there's no ranking. So anyway, guys, it's on Kindle. If you would be so kind to check that out. The Black Man's Guide Out of Poverty, written by yours truly. All my books are available in Kindle and paperback, but when it comes to Bachelor Pad Economics and Worthless, those books are, if not already, will be available in audible.com. But regardless, Bachelor Pad Economics will make a great graduation gift for any young man in your life. he's graduating from college. It's kind of like, well, here's what you should have done. The first half of the book is what you should have done, but you didn't. You fucked up. So here's how you salvage your second half of life. Worthless, that helps any. That is definitely a high school graduation gift. Please, ladies and gentlemen, will you please get your niece, your nephew, any loved one, any young, you know, the neighborhood kid that you actually care about, please get them that book. That's got to be. I should have a bump. This should be a bestseller every year as graduation comes along. So please get that for those kids. Enjoy the decline. What was it? Robert Bruce. He gave me a very kind review. Said it was the second best book he ever read, and he reads a lot of books. So I do take that very humbly. Thank you very much, Robert. Behind the Housing Crash, again, written by yours truly. Then we have Captain Capitalism, Top Shelf, and Reserved. Those are my best of the blog. So if you don't want to go sifting through the blog trying to find my best posts, because not all my posts are well-thought-out posts. They're just links or a little one-off or a shots fired type of thing. Go to Captain Cap, or I'm sorry, go to Amazon and look for Top Shelf and Reserve. And I'm going to be coming out with Cappy Quarterly here pretty soon once I get off my ass. Do all that other shit. Day by Day Cartoon by Chris Muir. You could search that online. Silvio Canto's book, Cubanos in Wisconsin. Help out our buddy Silvio there. Dave Vicerini's As I Walk These Broken Roads. And then Marty Andrade's Nixon's Guide to the Multiverse. Thank God he had a health scare. I don't know if he got a kidney infection or what, but his doc says your kidneys ain't working, and that's not good. But then I got a voicemail from him yesterday because I called him. I said, Marty, what the hell? Are you all right? And then he returned a voicemail. And he was like, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm happy. Sounded great. So thank God for Marty. Drink your cranberry juice with your lemon in there. That'll help out with the kidneys. Not to sound like one of those girls who watch too many YouTube videos or read too many articles from the natural health store. Tap Whiskey, Rollo Tomasi's, which is also The Rational Male. There we go. The Rational Male, Rollo Tomasi, he has a little venture, a little entrepreneurial venture going on the side called Tap Whiskey, WHISKY, whiskey without the E. Go to tapwhiskey.com if you're interested in buying some whiskey and keeping that money within the manosphere. And Ann Sturzinger, AnnSturzinger.com. She's got a ton of books out there. She's got her blog. She runs around with that Matt Forney fella over in Chicago, and they have a good time. Yes, perfect. That's all the sponsors.
Now, listen, man. I like the news. You guys like the news?
I'm going to give you guys some economic, some financial advice, okay? Because I love you guys. From The Blaze, and the only reason I had to go here, this is a bit of a dated one, but The Blaze likes to throw up a bunch of ads and interrupt your reading because they're assholes. So I apologize if I have to interrupt and turn off ad block or whatever. Woman hiking in Israel's Galilee thought she'd stumbled upon a toy. She soon discovered she had made a 2,000-year-old world-class find. Woman hiking with friends in Israel's Galilee region stumbled upon an extremely rare 2,000-year-old gold coin that offers a unique glimpse at the experience of soldiers serving in the Holy Land during the days of the Roman Empire. The Israeli Antiquities Authority said Monday that the coin, minted by Emperor Trajan in 107 AD in homage to Roman Empire founder Emperor Augustus, whose image is on the front of the coin, was the second such coin ever found in the world. Until now, oh, that's a beautiful looking coin. Oh, look at that thing. Can't wait to fire up that crucible today, guys. I'm going to fire that thing up and melt me some freaking copper. Until now, the only known ancient gold coin of this kind was located in the British Museum. Danny Sion, senior numismatist, I thought it was a numinist, numismatist, there we go, at the Israelis Antiquity Authority, explained that the coin was one of a series minted by Trajan as a tribute to the emperors who ruled before him, calling it a world-class find and a fantastic discovery. This coin, minted in Rome in 107 CE, or AE, or no, AC, BC, AD, is rare on a global level, he said in a statement Monday announcing the discovery. On the reverse, we have the symbols of the Roman legions next to the name of the ruler Trajan, and on the obverse, instead of the image of the Emperor Trajan, was usually the case. God almighty, guys, how many hyphens and commas are we going to put in this? There is the portrait of the Emperor Augustus defined. Lori Rimmon said she noticed the shiny object in the grass while hiking recently in the Eastern Galilee. She said that at first she thought she'd stumbled upon a toy, but then when she showed it to her guide, realized it was an ancient gold coin. After a phone call to the Israeli Antiquities Authority, an archaeologist with the agency showed up 2 hours later to confirm it was a once-in-a-lifetime discovery. See, 2 hours! The fucking Syrians could put their goddamn Russian tanks on the border with Israel. We might get a response in 5 or 6, but you find a gold coin, there's a government agent there within 2 hours to go make sure that you give it to them. It was not easy parting with the coin. After all, it is not every day one discovers such an amazing object, but I hope I will see it displayed in a museum in the near future, Rimmon said. Yeah, you think it wasn't easy? You think I find a gold coin, I'm going to call or let anybody fucking know? Donald T. Area, head curator of the coin department at the Israelis Antiquities Authority, noted that even though some soldiers of the Roman Empire received generous compensation in the form of gold coins, the high value meant they weren't always able to spend them. Historical sources describing the period note that some Roman soldiers were paid a high salary of 3 gold coins, the equivalent of 75 silver coins each payday. Because of their high monetary value, soldiers were unable to purchase goods in the market with gold coins. See, this is what I was telling you about. I don't know if gold's the way to go, guys. I mean, you could buy a house within the post-apocalyptic or post-U.S. Dollar collapse, but I think silver and copper is going to be the way to go, as the merchants could not provide change for them, Ariel explained. Ariel offered a hypothesis that the 2nd century soldier who was paid with the coin may have lost it or had it stolen, which would explain how it ended up in a field for 2,000 years. During the Roman period, gold coins were struck for large financial transactions and for the Roman army. There we go. Okay. Whilst the bronze and silver coins of Emperor Trajan are common in the country, his gold coins are extremely rare, Ariel said. So far, only 2 other gold coins of this emperor have been registered in the state treasuries, one from Gavant Shaul near Jerusalem, and the other from Quirat Kat or Gat region, and the details on both of them are different to those that appear on the newly found rare coin. Well, you would think you'd find them. I'm wondering, when Rome wasn't sacked, if they didn't grab those gold coins and melt them all down, because there's got to be more than 2 of them floating around. If they were used for large financial transactions, you'd think you'd find them in a treasury chest somewhere. But I bet you the barbarians at the gates and the Visigoths come in. They say, hey, what's in this treasury box over here? They crack it open. Oh, look at all this gold. Let's go grab it and we'll melt it down and turn it into jewelry or something. I bet you that's what happened. That's probably why there's so few of it left. Here we go. Here's where the lesson begins, ladies and gentlemen. The Israeli Antiquities Authority said that it plans to award Rimmon, who found the coin, a certificate of appreciation for displaying good citizenship. Fuck you, Israel, and fuck your goddamn certificate of appreciation for displaying good citizenship. You guys could suck my fucking dick. I find, and if you find, you ever find a coin like this, you never, ever, ever tell the authorities. I think there was this guy over in the United Kingdom. Like, he discovered, let's look it up. I'm pretty sure he discovered a whole gold treasure. He found, like, a whole field of gold treasures. Just like a treasure trove. Found Britain. Yeah, largest hoard of Anglo-Saxon gold found. Amateur metal detector. How much you want to bet that this guy didn't get to do it? First pieces of gold were found in a farm field by an amateur metal detector who lives alone on disability benefit. Oh, dude, I wouldn't tell the media. I wouldn't tell anybody. I would just shut the fuck up. I would be quiet. And then a harvest of Anglo-Saxon gold and silver so beautiful about tears the eye of one expert has poured out of the Staffordshire field, the largest hoard of gold from the period ever found. This guy could have retired rich. The weapon and helmets decorations, coins, and Christian crosses amount to up to more than 1,500 pieces, with hundreds still embedded in blocks of soil. It adds up to 5 kilograms of gold, 3 times the amount found at the famous Sutton Hoo ship burial in 1939, and 2.5 kilograms of silver. It may be the swag from a spectacularly successful raiding party of warlike Mercians around the time of 800 or 700 AD. I just want to find out what happened. Okay, Herbert could be sharing a reward of at least 1 million, possibly many times that, with the landowner as local museums campaign to raise the fund to keep the treasure in the county where it was found. Okay, all right, good. At least here, the landowner and the discoverer get to keep it. All right, that's so if you're going to find, if you're going to discover gold, if you're going to discover rare treasure, you don't want to find it in Israel. If you do find it in Israel, you take it to the local coin dealer. No, you don't do that because they'd have an eye for it. You go and get a brooch from the local Walmart at Israel, and you put it in the little thing to make it look like just a regular old gold coin. Or you put it in a watch or something, and you quietly get on that fucking plane, and you go back to the United States, and then you go have somebody really appraise it. And they say, what'd you get? Say, fuck, I just bought it at a bazaar over at some place. Don't know where I got it. Fucking hell, Christ. What was it? There was Jesse James lost treasure, lost gold. There's an American. 10 million. Yeah, there's a U.S. Not even. It's not a legend or myth. It's true. Black Bart Jesse James, who had $10 million worth of gold from the San Francisco gate that, like everybody else, wants to load up their website with a ton of advertising. maybe it was a stagecoat, black bandit, a bandit like Black Bart or Jesse James and his secret gang of post-Civil War Confederates, or the clerk who ripped off the U.S. Mint in San Francisco in 1909, or maybe it was just the theories about how $10 million worth of 19th century gold coins came to be buried in a couple Sierra Nevada backyard. Oh, no, this isn't it. All right, that was discovered. There's some lost treasure. Boy, I didn't even know about that $10 million in lost gold. Legend of Jesse James pictures. They claim they found the... Oh, I guess they did find it. All right, never mind. Was Jesse James treasure found? Jesse James treasure is on the History 2 channel tonight at midnight. So it's awesome. They find coins, gold, and more. Okay, so they really haven't found it. He had stolen... Okay, by the time Jesse James was killed in 1882, he'd stolen over $1.5 million, according to some estimates, gold, coins, and cash that could be well worth over $50 million today. History often paints James as a clever outlaw who stole money to finance a lavish criminal lifestyle, a man whose 16-year-long crime spree came to a dramatic halt in 1882 when a fellow gang member betrayed him and shot him dead in the back of the head. Joseph stealing it from him is actually secretly lost, so it's a cat. Yeah, okay, it's the hit Jesse James treasure hasn't been found yet. That's the one. And if in my little Western explorations and expeditions and adventures I happen upon Jesse James's treasure, guess what? I'm not telling nobody. Not telling a soul. Matter of fact, I'd probably leave it right there and, like, you know, spirit away a couple coins and use that as my bank. Like, you haven't found it in 100 years. Nah, this is as good a place as any way to keep it hidden away, and I'm just going to, like, grab a couple coins as I need it. Yeah, I'm going to buy this house. I'm going to buy this ranch over in South Dakota. Where'd you get the gold coins? I don't know. Passed on family heirlooms. Just give me the freaking ranch. How'd you afford that Ferrari? I don't know. It was these golden heirlooms from the great Clary family. I thought my parents were piss poor. They did me a great favor. They hid their wealth from me all this time so that I would grow up under humble beginnings and learn to appreciate the value of a dollar and hard work ethic. And, here's your gold coins, Aaron. It's like, oh, thanks, Dad. Yeah, I was just joking with you. The past 40 years, we were richer than hell. That's what I would do if I ever had a kid. I wouldn't make it so bad that the kid, you know, lost 30 pounds in college on a frame of 140. But I would let the kid, you know, I wouldn't let him know what I did. I'd actually have to get a hotel. I'd have to get an office, have to do my podcasting, I'd have to give him a fake name, too. Like, he couldn't look. We'd have to give him a fake name. Think about that. Last name, Clary.
Yeah, Clary, White Bear Lake. Hey, I'm a Clary in White Bear Lake. Who's this guy here in Clary? Holy shit, it's Dad. You know, he does what? He makes money?
I'd have to act like a janitor or something. So I'd, oh no, you know, I put on a uniform, then I'd go to my office, I'd do the thing. And then, he'd think we're dirt poor, I'd drive a shitty car. Well, I already do drive a shitty car. Okay, so there wouldn't be that many changes, now that I think about it. And then down the road, I'm like, yeah, I'd save up some money. I'm like, yeah, here's your silver.
Why did I thought we were dirt poor? Yeah.
The real wisdom would have come in my asshole consulting wisdom, saying, son, here's a book called Worthless, read it. I wouldn't even have to raise my own kid. I'd just give him the books already written. Here, read this. Now go away. Go play. Dad's got a drink. That's. Oh, jeez. All right, what else? Let's get some fan mail. I've been backing up on the fan mail here a bit. Armando writes, hi, Aaron. I was the one who sent you the request asking for advice on whether or not I should leave UCLA. It was tough for me to leave, it being a prestigious university and all, but I came to appreciate your advice. Along with a few other factors, but mostly money, I left. I'm at a community college right now, and I'm looking to go to other schools for, at most, half of the price. There you go. Thanks again. You helped save me tens of thousands of dollars, best 35 or 45, whatever it was, I spent towards college. See, there we go. Asshole consulting. What's the rate of return on that? Tens of thousands. Let's just assume it was 20,000 equals 20,000. And divided by 45. What's the average rate of return? A 440% rate of return by Asshole Consulting. Do you get a 440% rate of return with your Goldman Sachs account? Even with all the bribery that you give to the people to, you know, when you're leveraging and your options, do you guys get 440%? No, you don't. Because you guys are evil assholes. You're not a good asshole like me. The good asshole. That will be my biography that my biographer will write. This comes from Kevin. Kevin writes, holy shit, did you nail it on the head with this one? I think he's referring to Curse of the High IQ. It was almost scary reading it, almost as if this was my life I was reading about. As a kid, I was considered gifted by the school district. They placed me into a magnet program. I never thought much of it. I have, however, been dealing with depression, alcohol, and all the other shit you described in this book. In short, thank you for putting this out there. I took your advice and took an IQ test online. Sure as shit, I came in at 128. See, there you go. I'm not making this stuff up. Oh, the amount of butthurt, though, about the reviews. An English teacher read the book thinking she was smart, or he was smart, didn't tell me the gender. But they did not like, they quoted, the fact you have a D- in English doesn't mean you're an idiot. It means you're a genius being taught by an idiot English teacher. Something like that. And they did not like that. They did not like it. So I'm sorry to that person who thought they were smarter than they really are. I can't help it. You're a moron. I can't help it. You're an English teacher. The first clue that you were a moron is that you decided to major in the subject that you've been speaking this entire time. And you would have thought that would have been a high-paying profession. But probably would have scored a few points higher, but I couldn't go back to correct a few test questions I knew were wrong. Now I don't feel like such a head case. Hope all is well. I had to kill Facebook for a while for my own sanity, but I had to take a break from that shit. The constant shit I see on there on my feed. Good job on the book. Kevin. Well, thank you, Kevin. Yeah, I've had a kind of tone out on the Twitter and the Facebook. I use it primarily as what's it called? Press release devices. You know, here's the post I wrote. Here's the latest podcast. And I think I added it up, and only like 5% of the posts that come over are relevant to my job or relevant to this profession or aren't a pure waste of time. Politics has become more and more a waste. I just don't care anymore. I mean, I got the answers already. And I know you guys, it's all new to you guys. Not you guys, listeners, but to everyone on Facebook. It's like, hey, did you know the way, like, today was what, Equality Day, and all these articles come out about the wage gap. Did you know the wage gap was, yeah, I know the wage gap was bullshit. You don't have to preach to the choir. Go convince these freaking self-pitying, woe is me, I want to do less work for more pay type broads out there that just use it as a victim and a way to enslave other people. I mean, go tell them. Let's advance it. Let's say, no, you're just a lazy bitch that wants to do less work for higher pay. Just say that. See, here's your proof. Here's your statistics. You're wrong, all right? But I've done that a million times over before, and it doesn't seem to advance this conversation anymore. So I'm sick and tired of telling you you're wrong. I'm going to start questioning your motives, and I'm going to insult you. I'm going to get you pissed off. I'm going to get you angry. I'm going to keep doing that until you admit that you're wrong and that's what you're doing. That not only you're wrong, but you're using this as a way to extract more money for less work. That's it. Kevin writes, Cappy, enjoyed the review of Champagne. A quick note on the Phalanx era. It's actually native to North America and was accidentally imported to Europe in the 19th century. It looks like a little aphid and eats the roots of wine grapes. European wine grapes had not evolved any resistance, and the little bug pretty much wiped out nearly every vineyard in Europe. So Europe gave North America the plague, etc., and got paid back an aphid. The solution to this day was to graft North American roots to European, example, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, etc., vines. The little bug doesn't kill the North American roots, which do have resistance, and you can still enjoy your favorite types of wine. I find that drinking wine can improve one's pronunciation of French. Longtime fan, keep up the good work. Cheers, Kevin. Oh, that's cool. So wait a minute. If the grapevines, there are already grapes here in North America then, right? Because they would have to be the grapevines here, and the aphids developed it, and then the grapevines in North America developed the resistance. Because it wasn't like Europe had the grapevines and imported it over here like they did, I don't know what, cows, horses. What else did we import from over there? Pigs we got from Europe. So we already had, I wonder if, see, this is where I wish, one of three wishes, I wish there was a documented Indian history for the North American and South American continents. I wish we knew what happened here. Because we'd have the answer. Because I was going to ask, well, did the Indians have wine? Did the Indians know how to make fermented wine out of grape? Because the grapes are obviously here if we have aphid-resistant grapevines. So then we would go over to, that we imported them over to Europe to save the European wine industry. So it was here. They had the tools. I'm wondering where do grapes grow naturally here in the United States? Is it California? They seem to grow well there. And did the Indians grab them and start making wine? I don't know these things because the Indians didn't have a freaking written language. Here's a lengthy one. Hey, Cappy, I stumbled upon your blog a week ago while Googling something about diamond prices. Got sent to your post about women who love diamonds and what a terrible, quote, investment they are. And I felt like I was reading my own rantings. I have no doubt we were separated at birth. As a high IQ, atheist, libertarian, INTJ, I don't believe in that Myers-Briggs things. I know people do, but I don't even know what the hell. I think I'm an ENTJ. The world is a frustrating place, and after just finishing your book, I have to thank you for putting everything so clearly and in such a fucking hilarious manner. I have no idea where you live or where or when you travel, but fuck, I would love to hit a bar and drink with you for a night. People like us are rare indeed. I'm lucky enough to have a business partner who is a true equal, but both of us routinely pull out our hair at the frustrations of everyday life interacting with morons. It gets very lonely sometimes. To compound it, I now live in a very small rural town. It seems to have an even higher than average concentration of cretins. My cross to bear. What are you over in Wyoming? Anyhow, the mention of Bill Burr, who I fucking love, at the end of your book got me to thinking about how smart people tend to gravitate towards the same comics. I'm guessing you're also a Greg Giraldo fan and Doug Stanhope. I am a Doug Stanhope fan and also probably a George Carlin fan, of which I am. Maybe Mitch Hedberg as well. Fucking love Mitch Hedberg. Mitch Hedberg is brilliant. He's dead, but he's brilliant. And how many of these comics struggle with drinking and drugs? Geraldo is dead. Have you ever read his life story? Hedberg is dead from drugs. Stanhope is a total nut with booze and drugs. I know Carlin was too. I always wondered how the fuck Carlin made it into his 70s. I was lucky enough to see him 2 months before he died. Then you have the comics for morons, the guys that go crazy trying to figure out how the fuck they make money. Did I read this before? The George Lopez's of the world. Yeah, I read this one before. Yeah, I speculate that Larry the Cable Guy could, for all we know, he could be a thespian Shakespearean actor. So we got that there. I know why I saved this. For the name of the comedians, that's why I saved it. Greg Giraldo. Okay. Sorry about that, guys. Read that one before. All right, I'll look. That's why I said. Okay, now I can throw this one. All right, so we can throw that away. I'm really just cleaning this up. Already read that one. What the hell is this? Oh, these are all receipts. Put that there. Oh, I gotta mention this. If you happen to be in the Twin Cities area, How to Speak Conservative. This is a seminar, a speech, what do you call it? Conference? Workshop. That's what it is. Workshop. April the 23rd, Saturday. Registration 8:30. Classes from 9 to 3:30. Oh, that's during the daytime. Oof. You'd have to wake up early to get to this one. Lunch included. Location, the AFP Meeting Room at 2218 East 117th Street in Burnsville, Minnesota. The cost is $29 plus a registration fee. But I'll read the flyer here. Political season is upon us. How many family dinners are ahead with Uncle Fred sharing his progressive political views? You want a positive conversation but aren't sure what to say. You're more conservative, but you're not sure why or how to share your ideas positively. Our one-day workshop will teach you 1. Quick history of conservative thought. 2. Basic conservative core values. 3. Why conservative solutions often better solve society's challenges. 4. Central differences between conservative and liberal worldviews. 5. How to identify underlying assumptions in conversations. 6. How to reframe conversations using conservative values. 7. How to tell better stories using conservative principles. You could register online on http://howtospeakconserve.ticketleap.com. howtospeakconserve.ticketleap.com. I got to put that up. Put that up there. Tony writes, "Hey, Captain, a friend in high school, we are both freshmen and we know you like... We would like to know if you vape. Show me a YouTube channel, and you have provided infinite more advice and wisdom than any of my teachers or parents through your YouTube series, blogs, and podcasts. That's because I know what the fuck I'm talking about. Thanks to you, I now know what I plan to major in, economics, is fucking worthless, and I should just buy books or borrow from a library." There you go. "From Milton Friedman, currently reading Capitalism and Freedom, or Hayek, and save the money I would have spent on a degree." Well, don't just read those guys, too, because you got to know your enemy. You got to read, God, I wouldn't recommend General Theory of Employment and Law, or General Theory of whatever fucking Keynes book was. It's a hard read. But read the other guy's stuff, too, because otherwise you won't be able to converse with these people. You got to know their vocabulary and the words they use. "I now plan on majoring in chemical engineering or learning C++ and other coding languages on my own and forging a career that way. Thanks for all the advice. If I do order a running watch through Amazon and not buy it from Dick's in person, Dick's Sporting Goods," he's not saying assholes, there's a place called Dick's Sporting Goods in the Twin Cities, "that should send 20-ish dollars your way and some more whenever I choose to buy your books. Love your work. A politically incorrect freshman sleeping through their bullshit classes who realizes that attempting to stay anonymous is stupid with my email address." Well, I just mentioned your first name. I'm not going to mention your last name. I know that much to do that. The Budo School in Japan. This is from Ed. "Hey, Captain, this isn't a question, but just a four-year information for your anti-college arsenal. For kids who don't know what they want to do, but whose parents insist they go to college, a good compromise might be the International Budo University in Japan. It's a $5,000 one-year program where you learn judo, kendo, zen archery, karate, and aikido. And Japanese, of course. The living situation is luxury-free dorm, and you're expected to sweep the place and keep it clean. Great life experience, good lesson in sportsmanship, no humanities indoctrination, and a debt-free when you finish because you paid up front. Plus, a kid might pick up a work ethic by printing up some business cards and charging $15 an hour for English conversation lessons. Toodles, Ed." Well, thank you very much, Ed. The Budo School in Japan. I'll have to check that out. Got that done. Are we through? Are we done? Look at that shit. We're all done with that crap. All right, guys. That's it for the podcast. Remember to check your nuts. Get your ass checked for the ass cancer. And please, spread the good word about the old captain's blog. If you got a Facebook, you got social media, you got whatever you got, the YouTubes, you got whatever. Follow me on Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube. Go to iTunes and vote up the Clary podcast. I don't know why that helps. Vote it and rate it. DT and the man are very adamant about this. I don't know. They know something I don't, because they're much more professional about it than I am in getting out there. But just spread the good word. You guys know what to do. Spread the good word. Did you like this podcast? Then go like send it an email. Say, hey, listen to this guy. He talked about skyscrapers and how we got to tear them down and all this other stuff. So, all right, we'll catch you kids later. Toodles.